Hey, you guys, look, it's a bonus movie retrospective for this week. Just like we promised, we're finally doing Old Boy because this is the one that won in the Patreon poll. But if you've been watching any of our live streams or like read our Patreon messages or anything like that, we had a little trouble getting hold of this movie all of a sudden. When I put it in the poll initially, like when I put it in the pool of movies that we were going to do, it was on Shudder, along with the other two movies in the loose trilogy, you know, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Lady Vengeance. So all of them were on Shudder. But then when this movie won the poll, you know, it was gone. And I couldn't find it. It wasn't on Amazon Prime. It wasn't on anything. So finally, I just had to order the DVD off of eBay. And we finally got it. So we're finally getting this up. I'm glad we're finally getting this up on the actual day that it's actually supposed to go up. Even though we did an extra one. Because I, you know, figured that it wasn't going to get up in time. But yeah, so just as we promised, the patrons that voted for this, we're doing the 2003 South Korean neo-noir classic known as Old Boy.
Yeah, we got it on DVD, and actually the DVD quality is really good. It looks like Blu-ray.
It looks very nice.
They must have remastered it.
I guess
but it doesn't look like 2003. It looks like a new movie.
Yeah, you really wouldn't know. I mean, it's really, really, I mean, the visuals in this are so gorgeous. And there's really, there's a little bit of CGI, but not much. I think there's only like one or two very minor scenes that are CGI'd and you wouldn't really notice unless you were looking real close.
When you watch this movie, I can really see where John Wick got a lot of stuff. There's a lot of John Wick-ish type sets and action in a certain way. Not guns, but just martial arts.
Yeah.
You know, or fighting with knives and stuff.
Well, and one of the most famous scenes in this is that, like, hallway sequence where, you know, he's fighting all those dudes, and that was done in one take.
The visual tone kind of looks like John Wick to me.
Yeah, now, it does a bit. And like I said.
Yeah, I wasn't able to, like, really place it, I guess, you know, in the day that this came out. But, you know, maybe it's just because John Wick is supposed to be kind of like a kung fu movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's maybe that's where Old Boy gets that look, Korean version of a kung fu movie or something.
Yeah, this is technically, like I said, it's usually called a neo-noir. It's kind of like, I guess it's sort of like a revenge thriller, but it's a little bit different than your standard revenge thriller.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a lot more, the story is a lot more intricate. And yeah.
I called it a kung fu movie. It's not a kung fu movie.
Not at all.
It's more like a Hong Kong gangster movie. That's more what it's like.
Sort of, yeah.
That's what it kind of feels like. Or, you know, the visual tone to it. It seems like they borrowed it from that.
It also, this was actually directed by Park Chan-wook. And so this has actually been compared to like a Greek tragedy.
Yeah.
Like Oedipus.
Yeah.
Which, if you kind of follow the story of Oedipus and you follow this story, you will totally, totally see where all this. So it was for sure deliberate.
Yeah. It's a good movie. There's at times I thought it got a little bit convoluted in the storytelling and it kind of lost me. Like I lost track of what was going on. I was like, Jenny, what the hell is happening here? You know, because it's just the way it's edited. But it is a great movie. You know what I mean? Without Jenny, I'd have probably had to watch it two or three times to get every aspect of it, I think.
I think this is definitely a movie that you need to watch a few times.
Yeah.
Not only because, I mean, yeah, the story's kind of complicated, but also because there's a lot of, as I said, symbolism. There's a lot of, like, shit going back to, you know, a Greek tragedy type of thing. So there's a lot of that playing into it. Like, everything in this is deliberate, like the color choices, everything.
There's kind of flashbacks and flash forwards. Sometimes it'll lose you. You're like, wait, but hold on, where am I?
You know, yeah, you really, I mean, this is one you really got to pay attention.
You got to really pay attention to it.
But yeah, so like I said, this came out in 2003. The second movie in, as I said, it's sort of a loose trilogy. They don't really have a lot to do with each other. The first one, I think, was Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. And then the third one is Lady Vengeance. Neither of those I've seen. They might still be on Shudder. I don't know. They added all three of these on Shudder at the same time and I didn't see them. And now they're apparently gone. So this was actually based on a manga. Now, let's talk a little bit about this one. Now, this came out in 2003, and if you haven't seen it, like I said, it's a fucking classic. Fucking South Korea, man. They just, like, they're so good at these type of fucking movies.
Yeah, well,
horror movies, action movies, revenge thrillers. Like I said, I mean, this one, if you loved, you know, I Saw the Devil, which is one of the best movies I've ever seen ever, which is also South Korean. It's like, you really, really need to see this one as well, because this is...
Now, there's a caveat to what she just said. I lived in South Korea in their very early 90s, you know, for about a year. No, during the time I was there, 90, 91, Korea made crap. It was shit. All right, it was.
Well, but after a certain time.
Evidently, there were guys my age in Korea thinking the goddamn same thing. They're like, man, like, we got
to
really...
We need to make some good movies for a change.
what was traditionally happening in Korea is it was kind of like knockoffs of what was popular, cheap knockoffs of what was popular in the United States or Japan. There wasn't a lot of original stuff. But then I noticed, you know, around late 90s, early 2000s, all of a sudden, Korea started swinging for the fence and a lot of good stuff was coming out of there.
Yeah.
Original stuff.
A lot of action movies, horror movies and stuff like that that started coming out of South Korea around that time period. Like 90% of them.
Now, of course, you know, all your filmmakers are influenced by good films from all around the world. So you do see influences from Japan and Hong Kong and America in them, but that's fine. They didn't try to directly rip off what the hell was going on. Sometimes they would just kind of get into a trend and put their own take on it, you know. And that's kind of like, this is, I think it's kind of like a John Woo flick, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a Korean take on something that maybe John, but a lot better writing. You know, it wasn't a cash grab. Good original storytelling. Then.
This one is much more focused on, there are fight scenes in it and like some kung fu, if you want to call it that, but like, you know, some kind of down and dirty fight scenes. And there is some violence, some of it quite yucky.
Yeah.
Or, you know, squirm inducing. But it's not, the kind of point of the movie isn't that. Like, it doesn't shy away from that kind of shit. But the point of the movie, I think, is more this intricate story, this intricate plot that plays out. And also kind of, I guess, in a larger thematic sense, almost like the fact that you can't control your fate, or there are always like, you know, forces larger than yourself that are controlling, even though it seems like you have free will, which we might get into when we talk about. Because like I said, this came out in 2003, so we're going to spoil it because there are some kind of, there is kind of like a real big revelation at the end, which...
Oh, you're going to spoil that too.
Which it's better if you don't know that going into it.
I don't know if I spoil that.
I shouldn't?
No.
It's so hard to talk about without spoiling that, though.
Because, this movie's been around for a long time, but not everybody's seen it. It's true. Kind of a rare movie.
And man, it's really, really hard to get hold of. Like I said, I couldn't get a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I had the DVD I got was used. It's in gorgeous condition. It looks fantastic.
It was expensive too.
It was $20 for a used DVD, but I couldn't get it. And like some of the other copies were like $140, some shit like that. Yeah. I've heard that if you have a VPN, which I finally broke down and got NordVPN today because I was just like, man, fuck it. I think maybe you can watch this on South Korean Netflix. Because that's one of the things you can do on a VPN. You can watch Netflix from other... If you have a, you know, a U.S. Account, you can watch other countries. I don't know if it's on there still, but I watched another review of it, and they said that it was on South Korean Netflix. So that's where they watched it. So I don't know if it's still there. But if you have a VPN, like, check it out and see. It used to be on Shudder, but it's gone now.
I need to get off into the VPN action.
I just got it. I just did it. I did, because, you know, Dan Bell, that it's one of his sponsors. So I used his... thing, and so I got it. It was $89 for 2 years.
VPN and cryptocurrency, you can make all kinds of illicit purchases.
Well, I don't care about why. I don't even care about illicit purchases. I just want to watch some Netflix and Hulu Shutter for motherfucking country.
They don't want you watching that. That's funny.
Well, it's like, I don't care. I want to watch it. Cool. You'd think they'd want me to watch their fucking movies. It's like, if you want me to watch, you don't put it on our Shudder or our Netflix. It's like, so I'm going to go around your ass.
That's fucking American corporations. All these corporations are asshole. Corporations are asshole.
Well,
asshole. Isn't that what the guy from Hong Kong said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
China, I mean, it's just that they're sociopathic in the sense that all they care about is making money. So you know what I mean?
Yeah. Kind of. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. I will say before we get too much into the plot, maybe if you don't want me to spoil it, maybe I won't spoil it, but I will kind of go into what the plot is. This film also won the Grand Prix at 2004, the Cannes Film Festival, and Quentin Tarantino, big fan, which should come as a shock to zero people, because I think he was like the president of whatever, like the you know, that decided like which movies were gonna get the shit that year, and he was just like, he loved this movie so much. So all right, so this movie follows a dude named Odai Su. Now, when you first, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing everyone's name wrong, so if you're Korean, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. You know, I don't really mean to, I can't pronounce anyone's name, so you know. So Odai Su is kind of this middle-aged dude, and he's introduced at the beginning. Apparently he was on his way home for his daughter's fourth birthday party, but he got a little waylaid at a bar, and he got completely and utterly shit-faced. And it's implied that he got into a fist fight with some people. So he's like, you know, causing some trouble. So he's in a police station for presumably drunk and disorderly.
He's in a drunk tank.
Yeah. And he's just not happy. He is just acting up.
That's what Koreans do when they get drunk too. I used to see
He's
it first. You see it
acting
firsthand. They get drunk, Nick, just on the ground, rolling around, trying to throw bricks at people and stuff. You know what I mean? And have the cops sitting there watching them and trying to keep them contained. They got a lot of tolerance for drugs, though, in Korea. At least they when I was there. You could probably drive drunk and get away with it.
Well, they're just like, oh, people
They're like,
drink
yeah,
and, you
people
know, shit
drinking. Yeah,
happens.
he's had too much to drink. You know, that's, you know,
Look, look at him trying to
there's
piss
not a
in the
whole hell of a
corner.
lot to do for law enforcement in South Korea, just saying. They don't have a big crime problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, well,
So
that
they're,
sounds nice.
yeah, they're
Doesn't
not.
it?
They don't have a big crime problem.
But yeah, so he's like trying to pee in the corner and whatnot. So the cops are just kind of like, oh, geez, here we go. Now, so he has his friend, Juhwan, and his friend comes and picks him up. Now they go to, now this part of it, this prologue, I guess, is set in 1988. So Juhwan goes to a phone booth, like right outside the police station, and they call Odaisu's wife, and it's just like, you know, he got waylaid at the bar. It's like, sorry about that. We're bringing him right now because it's his daughter's birthday party or whatever. But then when Juhwan turns around, mysteriously, Odaisu has disappeared. And all that's left is this bag that has these little angel wings that he was going to give to his daughter for her birthday. So he's gone. So you find out a little bit later that Odaisu has been kidnapped by someone and put into what is essentially a private prison.
Yeah, it's a private prison kind of run by gangsters.
It looks like a hotel room, like a pretty okay like hotel room. And so they lock him in there. They feed him, like, under there's this little like hatch in the bottom of the door, and they push tray in there. They give him, he has a TV, he has a bed, he has, it's like, it's not a prison cell, it just looks like a hotel room.
Yeah, they pretty much only feed him something called yakimandu,
Yeah.
which is in Korea, it's kind of like their version of a damn hamburger. It's like quick to go food. You'd know them here as pot stickers,
Pot stickers.
or in Chinese, probably call them like dumplings. They
Yeah, they're
probably
like
call them
fried
fried
dumplings.
dumplings. They're
Yeah.
pork, ground pork.
Watching this movie really
They're
made me
good.
want some.
Yeah,
Well,
he was getting
that
sick of them because that was all they were giving
was
him.
all they gave him for like so yeah, so and what they do is that at night, I don't know if it's every night, but whenever they need to do something in the room or do some kind of like maintenance on him or whatever, they'll gas him and put him to sleep. And then they'll come in and cut his hair and clean up his room and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah, his room doesn't have a window. It's got a fake window of a fucking Dutch windmill. And
Yeah.
it's got a nighttime phase and a
The
daytime
daytime
phase.
phase.
And that's all he's got to look at and television. And he's going insane. He's basically in solitary beside that television.
Yeah, so he's in there and he finds out from the TV that his wife has been murdered and he's been framed for the crime. So like the gangsters that are keeping him, and they're keeping other people too. It's like a whole complex. And they have come in like after they gassed him and they took a glass that he had drunk from and they used like the DNA or, you know, or whatever, the fingerprints or whatever to like frame him for his wife's murder. So even if he gets out,
He can't go
he
anywhere.
can't go anywhere because he's a fugitive from the law. They think that he, you know, killed his wife. So he ends up being in there for 15 years. And he has no idea why he is in there. He has no idea who put him in there. You find out later on that this is essentially like a private prison where you can pay a gangster. It's like, hey, I don't like this motherfucker. Here's all this money and like lock him up. But they don't tell you why.
Yeah. They don't
So,
tell you who did it or
and they
anything.
don't help tell you who did it. So basically, so he's in there for 15 years, right? And he's gone a little loopy.
Yeah, he was training. He was training, though. He was punching the walls, getting his knuckles real hard and doing physical exercises, trying to escape. He did eventually escape.
Well, he tries to. Yeah. Well, he starts to escape. Yeah. It takes him a while. Like, he's doing, like, a fucking Shawshank Redemption where he's, like, trying to get around this brick with a chopstick. Yeah. And it takes him a while.
Metal chopstick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, just when it seems that he's going to be able to escape, like, he's kind of busted out one of the bricks or whatever, they knock him out with the gas. And then when he wakes up, there is a woman in there who seems to be hypnotizing him. Now, after that, he is released. They pretty much chuck him out of the prison onto the roof of a building. He's in a suitcase, and he pops out of this suitcase in a new suit and all this other stuff.
How about that?
And there's this guy there who's wants to jump off the...
Trying to commit suicide.
He's trying to commit suicide.
He's got the dog in his hand.
Well, see, I didn't pick this up, but I was watching like another breakdown of it, and apparently I don't know if the guy was going to kill himself because him and the dog were in love, like he was fucking the dog, and I guess he couldn't. I didn't pick up on that, but I saw another review that said that.
Right.
So I don't know if it was mentioned, and it's like, I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so he was a bestialist.
Yeah, because I think that the person who had done the review could also speak Korean.
Okay, yeah.
So I think that that's what. Why that dude was killing himself because no one would
accept
his forbidden love. For this little dog.
Yeah.
It's like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's a poodle.
Yeah, or I think it was it a Bichon or it was something like that.
Meaty, curly-haired dog is a poodle.
It's a little yappy type dog. Yeah, so basically he's like, okay, well, you can't die because I have to tell you this crazy fucking story of this shit that I just went through. So the time that Odaisu has been in this prison and he started like training, he was in there for like 6 or 7 years, I think, before he even figured out, hey, I'm going to start training. So when I get out, I can like revenge myself on whoever the fuck did this to me, because he has no idea why. So after he gets out, he starts like, you know, beating up people, starts to go into like an investigation of who and why he was imprisoned. Now, during the course of this investigation, very early on, one of the first things that he does is he goes into this sushi place and he meets this young sushi chef named Mido. And in probably one of the most infamous scenes in this movie, certainly the one that made the largest impression on me, he goes into this place and he says to Mido, I want to eat something that's alive.
Yeah. Inexplicably. Didn't really know why he wanted to eat something that was alive. She brings a damn octopus, and he's eating a live octopus. It's fighting him, and it's grabbing his nose.
Oh, my God, it's horrifying.
It's real.
It is real.
Yeah.
And he had to do that, like, 4 times.
Damn.
That's, yeah.
Kind of like...
That's
sad.
Commitment to a role.
Kind of sad to see. Some people have theorized that a damn octopus might be about as intelligent as a cat. But
that's what I was thinking the whole time. I found it very, very difficult to watch.
But in nature, they're eaten alive by fish anyway. I mean, it happens anyway. But
sure.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm just saying, if you don't want to see a dude eat a live octopus, like for real, maybe like fast forward over that part. But so what ends up happening is that him and Mido kind of like fall in love, because I guess after he eats the octopus, he kind of like passes out, and so she kind of takes a shine to him, even though he's much older than her, and you know, takes him to her house, where he almost immediately tries to rape her, but then he's just kind of like, oh, sorry, because she's like, hey, get off me, like with a knife or whatever.
Yeah, he's doing all kinds of weird shit because he's been solitary for 15 years. One of the things that he does when he gets out is immediately gets in a damn gang fight over a cigarette.
Yeah,
and because he just pulls it out of a dude's mouth, and then he starts beating his ass, and he doesn't care. He's like, oh, he's enjoying it.
Well, I think
because he hasn't had any stimulus.
Well, and he wanted to test out. Because when he was training in his room, he's like, I was just beating up like the wall or like watching TV or whatever. So I wanted to see if it would work in real life.
Yeah.
So he just like picks a fight with these like 4 or 5 teenage kids.
There was more than that.
Was there more than that? I can't remember.
6 to 8 of them.
But it was like a gang.
Yeah, he beat that ass.
Yeah.
But one thing that was kind of, you know, living in Korea, one of the things that was accurate is that the dudes, you know, they're not big. They got, you know, little bitty arms. And this guy, after he comes out of that damn prison, he's in relatively real good shape. So, yeah. Yeah. I've seen them use Taekwondo on each other. They were drunk, you know what I mean? And it's just fucking pitiful. And just slap fight, and then they fall apart, and then they recompose themselves and get back into a Taekwondo stance and slap fight. And it's fucking funny, man. They're not... Koreans are not fighters in that way, for the most part, unless they're like Golden Bat fucking unit, which is one of their special forces units right next to our unit. They were badasses. But looking back on it, those dudes were roiding. They were on a juice. They were big.
Well,
they had to have been on the juice. That had been illegal to get in Korea.
It all comes back to testosterone.
It all comes back to fucking testosterone and fucking anabolic performance. It's fucking big. Yeah. Bigger than any other Korean you saw walking around. They were like bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. So, as I said, his kind of quest for vengeance leads him and Mido and his friend, Ju Hwan, who in the interim, in the 15 years after he disappeared, he was the guy from the original part that rescued him from the drunk tank. He has kind of established this internet cafe type thing. So he's kind of like a computer hacker, computer programmer, something like that. So the three of them start doing an investigation to find out what exactly, where he was held, why he was held, who was holding him there. And interestingly, I love the way that he finds out is because, like I said, he was eating those fried dumplings. That's what they gave him like every single day for like 15 years. And he figured that they were getting it from a restaurant nearby. So the first thing that he does is him and Mido go to every single restaurant in the area that has fried dumplings. And he eats every single one of them, like, to see which restaurant they got it from. And then when he finally finds out, he follows the delivery man, like, back to the building. So he eventually does find out who it was that put him in this prison. But it takes a long time before you figure out why. And that's the thing. If I say why they put him in there, it's going to ruin it.
Yeah. Actually, finding out why it happened is really one of the best parts of this movie.
Yeah, so it totally
is. I'm kind of encouraging Jane not to spoil it. And then how the revenge actually plays out. You know what I mean? That's actually kind of like...
It's pretty fucked up, you guys. I mean, not in the sense that, because like I said, there is a lot of violence in this. Like I said, you see a dude eat a live octopus. A lot of people's like teeth get pulled out.
Yeah.
Shit like that. Lot of like teeth torture, that kind of shit.
What's funny though is that there's this kind that kind of stuff in the movie, but the tone is kind of like a John Wick tone.
Yeah.
So it's not repulsive in the way you would think it is. It's almost kind of humorous in a way. Kind of. The tone is just right.
I feel like it had a lot of dark humor.
Yeah.
Like it had a real dark humor kind of vibe to it, which I really liked.
That way, when you pull a dude's tooth out, it's not totally, you know what I mean, turning you off to where, oh, fuck it, I gotta turn this. it's not like that. You're just like, you accept it. You're like, okay.
Yeah. And it's not super, super graphic.
It's not real graphic. Right?
I think it's just a lot of it is kind of more your suggestion, like the sound that it makes. Yeah. Like, because you're just like, you know what I mean? Because it makes it like it's
a nasty. Yeah, and a bunch of other stuff happens, though, too, especially in the very end that's kind of like, oh. But you don't actually see it. It's just suggested that it happens.
A lot of the time, yeah. And sometimes the suggestion is kind of worse.
And then you're like, okay, here's something that, some people have to understand, you know, if they don't know Korea real well. Korea is not a Buddhist or Confucianist type nation. It's Christian. So the morality of the movie is playing off of Christian values. So the taboos that are happening in this movie are the taboos that you're fucking seeing. In other words, what is happening is not acceptable in Korea. You know what I mean? It's the same moral system, so that translates very well.
It plays like
to
I said.
Know
yeah.
What's happening in this movie as it unfolds? You can't go, maybe that's acceptable in that culture. No, it's not.
No.
No.
Well, it being unacceptable is kind of the main kind of fulcrum behind everything that happens
Koreans
in the movie.
Koreans are Presbyterian, I think.
But that's the thing. Well, like I said, this plays out very much like a Greek tragedy. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's very, very similar to, you know, like Oedipus the King or something like that. And there's a lot of references to that story in this, which I don't know if that spoils it or not. But so the interesting thing, too, is that even though, like I said, usually when people talk about what genre it is, it's usually a neo-noir is what they say. It's not like an action movie necessarily, even though it has action set pieces in it. And it also, it kind of gets called a revenge thriller too, although the interesting thing about it is that the person getting revenge isn't necessarily the person that you think it is, I guess, if I can put it like that.
Yeah, there's red herrings and stuff.
Yeah, and as I said, this is one of those, the plot behind it, and when, and as the story unravels, and he starts getting closer and closer to what exactly is going on, why he was imprisoned, and who did it, and for what reason. This is one of those movies that you really, really have to see several times, because there's a lot of details in there that that you might not pick up on the first time that really come into play, like, the more you see it. Like I said, there's even, like, all kind of symbolism about the patterns of the wallpaper in the back and, like, you know, the uses of the color red, the uses of the color purple, like all these different kind of, you know, symbolism and things like that that they're using that is not super apparent the first time you see it. But the more times you see it, like, it becomes, like, a lot clearer, like, the kind of the grand theme of it. Like I said, I feel like the theme of this thematically, or, you know, the overarching theme of it is kind of like, you not having any, despite you thinking that you have control over your actions, there's always like a force greater than yourself that's actually controlling it. So it's almost kind of like a fate type of thing. But in this sense, so as I said, it's very much like a Greek tragedy. It plays out almost exactly like that. But yeah, it's just this, I just love this movie so much. I think I saw it back when, so when it came out of 2003, I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I think I saw it a year or two after that. I either rented it or somebody loaned it to me. And I remember really, really liking it. I remembered a few things about it. I remembered, like, the live octopus eating, because, man, you're never going to forget that when you see it. Yeah. Believe me. I remembered that, and I remembered the big revelation at the end. Although I only remembered it halfway through the movie, when we were watching the movie last night. And I was just like, oh, I just remembered, like, what, and it's like, I think that I remember, unless I'm thinking of a different movie, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure I just remembered, like, what the big revelation was at the end. And yeah, I was right about that. So I did remember that. But other than that, I had forgotten a lot of it. So it was really nice to, like, see it again.
Now, the DVD version that we had came in multiple languages. We first, when it first started, it came in
the English dub, which
it looked no corny and kind of low budget. So we flipped it over to original Korean dialogue with subtitles. And it really makes the movie a lot more upscale. I mean, you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
English dubbing just always makes movies seem cheap.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
On the downside of the subtitles is that the story, reading the story, it seemed, especially when you got down towards the middle part of it and beyond, it started to seem kind of overly complex and convoluted. But they're doing that on purpose, because they're trying to kind of, like, conceal the big reveals towards the end.
And it all kind of comes together.
It starts to gel eventually, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
And you understand, like, why everything happened the way that it happened.
But if you don't know, if you know that going in, it's probably a lot better. I didn't know that going into the story, so I kept thinking I had missed something.
Yeah.
Like, wait, hold on, how we get here? You know?
Right.
Like, what happened? You know, so I'm doing the old man thing. Huh? What did you say? What's this about? What's the old man thing? I started doing the old man thing.
Who's this now?
Who's this now? Yeah.
See, you're right. You tell me. You tell me that you don't do that, but you totally do. So, who is it? What's going on?
What's going on?
Wait, is he really out, or what? I don't know.
What's that? He ate the chicken. No, what was the one?
No, it was the goat.
The goat.
He ate the goat. It was Jurassic Park. That's why I still remember.
It was the old man in the theater.
That was 1993. Yeah, I saw Jurassic Park with my friend in the theater.
And there
was
a
really old dude sitting next to us. And he just kept commenting on it. Who's this? Yeah. Why is he at the door? What's going on? Who's that on the phone? It ate the goat.
Yeah, yeah.
At that point, I like cracked up, but then I turned around. I was like, thank you, sir. Thank you.
He said that.
Yeah. And his wife was just like,
oh. Yeah. He obviously was, he was losing it. Sounded like he was a little bit of Alzheimer's there.
And deaf, too, and probably. Because he was talking like in a normal tone of voice.
Well, some people go to the movies as a look at me opportunity. Don't look at the movie. Look at me. Look at me reacting to the movie.
There's a lot of that. Like, bitch, this isn't Mystery Science Theater.
They're
funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, so also, too, I kind of want, like I said, I feel bad that I can't spoil it because there's so much I wanted to talk about the ending. And I really, really like the ambiguity of the ending. It's just a really, really interesting ending, and I'm just curious. So if anybody has seen this and you know what happens in it, then just put it down in the comments, and we can talk about it down in the comments. Just put, like, spoiler and then, like, put some faces and shit like that. Because I do kind of feel like, even though this has been out for a really long time, like you said, it seems kind of difficult to get hold of.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like Jeremiah Johnson, one of the best movies ever made. Very few people in the modern era have seen it.
Yeah.
I want to do a show on that, too. Amelia's flick.
Yeah, we should, actually.
Yeah. It's one of the best movies ever made, and not many people have seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen YouTube reviews of it, and they only got a couple hundred views. A lot of comments, but it's four or five guys commenting.
Yeah. Love this movie. Yay, somebody's talking about it.
Yeah, it's a Robert Redford movie. This is one of the best movies ever made. It's shot on location, and... You know, and it was just...
Some things just fall between the cracks, man. It's like you never really know. And a lot of times it doesn't have to do with how good the movie is. Like sometimes it's just the timing wasn't right, or maybe it just didn't appeal to a wide enough audience or something. It did well at the time
in the 70s.
It just kind of got forgotten. Yeah.
You know, it's a long movie that's kind of slow, not a lot of dialogue, but it's beautiful and scenic and epic. It's like Conan, but it's happening in the damn mountains and mountain men and shit. And a one-man war against the Crow Indians who are trying to kill each other over a woman. It's a good story. Wow. Yeah. You know, based on an American legend. Jeremiah motherfucking Johnson. Also known as Liver-Eating Johnson. He was a cannibal.
Yeah.
All right. Which they kind of leave that out. But in real life, he was a dude that gone Indian is what it was called. He went Indian.
Yeah.
You know, he's eating people's livers to fucking get strength.
As you do.
Yeah.
I don't know your life.
So he did it. Yeah. He was like a crow.
Well, it's like, you know, just in case. It could be true.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, just covering all the bases like you do. But yeah, so as I said, you know, I feel bad that I can't spoil it, but I really do kind of feel like, especially nowadays, because it seems like it's kind of hard to get hold of. As I said, it's really not available on any streaming services in the US, at least as of this recording. It was on Shudder for a little while, but it's gone now. I think there's a couple of sites. I think there was a site called Asian Movies Online, like with dashes in between. I think maybe you can watch it on there for free. That was maybe like I think the app was called BeFlix or something like that. We couldn't get the app on ours. That's why we didn't end up watching it on there. But, you know, so maybe you can find it somewhere. Nobody's put it on YouTube as far as I know, at least in a decent, you know, thing. But so I had to buy a used DVD off of eBay. But check the South Korean Netflix, see if it's on there or something like that, because I definitely feel like this is, if you like Asian cinema at all, you really do need to see this movie because it's like a fucking classic.
Yeah.
And you'll really dig it, I promise.
It's a good watch.
Yeah, it's really entertaining. I mean, it's
in
a weird kind of way. Also, it's like a really nice looking movie too. I really like the DVD looks really great. But yeah, so that will do it for our finally at last review of Old Boy. And we will see you guys on the next one. Bye.